Will the House Taxation Committee please come to order? Will the Secretary please read the call, the roll call?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Welch?
Here.
Vice Chair Thain?
Here.
Representative Abbott?
Excused.
Representative Barker?
Here.
Representative Brewster?
Here.
Representative Buckley?
Excused.
Representative Butcher?
Yes.
Representative Konauer?
Present.
Representative Essman?
Here.
Representative Fern?
Here.
Representative Kazmaier?
Here.
Representative Kearns?
Here.
Representative R. Knudsen?
Excused.
Representative Malone?
Here.
Representative Marler?
Here.
Representative Miner?
Here.
Representative Niklokakos?
Excused.
Representative Romano?
Here.
Representative T. Smith?
Here.
Representative Vinton?
Here.
Chair Fielder?
Here.
Mr. Chair, there are 17 members present, 4 excused.
Thank you. In way of announcements, I ask you all to please silence or mute or vibrate your cell phones, please, so that we don't interrupt this hearing. If you're going to testify, I hope that you please signed up outside so we have an idea of how many people are going to be testifying here today. We have 5 bills to hear, and we have to move things along so we can stay within our agenda. I thought maybe just to spice things up today, we might take executive action outside just to move things along quickly. Okay, without further comment, if you're going to testify, when you step up to the lectern, please state your name clearly and spell your last name. Everything that happens in this committee between opening gavel and ending gavel is recorded and is viewable by the public. So when you step up there, name, affiliation, and spell your last name. And I don't think we have too many people that are testifying today that have signed up yet. So I think we can probably move along without limiting testimony, but when you testify, please do not feel like you've got to repeat other testimony. That helps move things along, keep us on schedule. If you have a handout, hand that out prior to your testimony, and do not read from whatever you're handing out. So if we can, we'll get started on our bills. The first bill today that we're going to read for our short title is, we're covering 5 bills today. Those are House Bill 497, 508, Senate Bill 121, Senate Bill 124, and House Bill 515. After that, we'll probably take a short break, and then we'll do executive action on House Bill 416. So moving on to House Bill 497. Can we please hear the short title of the bill?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 497, require property tax bill to include comparison with prior year.
Representative Anderson, you're free to open on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, my name is Fred Anderson, last name spelled A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, representing House District 20 in Great Falls. And if I may, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, I have a handout. I'll send one down each side.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee, I'm pleased to be with you here this morning on this crisp morning and bring you House Bill 497 for your consideration. This is a transparency bill which will provide a comparison of your current property tax with last year's tax on the same property. This comparison provides the taxpayer a readily available overview of the reason for changes in his or her tax statement. Are the changes due to adjustments in appraised property values, voted levies, permitted levies? This may be, as noted in the bill, either in written form or on the Treasurer's website. Mr. Chair and committee, I'll sit and allow for testimony from proponents, opponents, and informational witnesses, and I'd like to reserve the right to close.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Do we have proponents for House Bill 497? Proponents in the room for House Bill 497? Seeing none, do we have proponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do we have opponents in the room for House Bill 497? Opponents in the room? Seeing none, do we have opponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have informational witnesses in the room for House Bill 497? Seeing none, do we have informational witnesses online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions from the committee regarding House Bill 497. Representative Fern.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess the de facto person would be the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fern.
Representative Anderson, Mr. Chair. Did you have the opportunity to consult with any of the clerks or treasurers on this proposal?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fern. Yes, both. This bill was here last session also, and there was some confusion about whether the treasurers had any opposition to it, and by the time the information came that they did not, it was too close to transmittal to leave the table. This time I've talked to some and there's no opposition from anyone that I've talked to, Mr. Chair, Representative Fern.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative, Mr. Chair.
Other questions from the committee? Vice Chair Thain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Thain.
Just to follow up on Representative Fern, Mr. Chair. Good sponsor. Does the software that the treasurers use easily accommodate in all 56 counties a listing of prior year in addition to current year taxes?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Thain, to my understanding, it does. And if you note there, comparison can be either be in written form when they send it or on the website. And last time the bill was presented, and again this time, there were some treasurers in the far eastern part of the state that would prefer to do it in written form because of their broadband capabilities and some of their computer capabilities, but almost every other county can do it on the website and the software is readily available.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and sponsor.
Vice Chair Welch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Welch.
Representative Anderson, I have a question, and you and I briefly talked about this, about the size of the print on a tax bill when you get it, and now we're going to add another column to it. And I know you gave us examples. One is pretty clear on. The other one, by the time you add in another whole column stuff, the print's going to get pretty small for some of us that are old. So would you please address that?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Welch, I'm not sure that I want to tie the print size to chronological age, but yes, on some of the statements, the print is pretty small, and that's the prerogative of the county that's sending it out. And I don't have a good answer for that other than perhaps a magnifying glass, but I think if you look at it on the website, it's much easier to read than it is in print form, Mr. Chair.
Other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative Anderson, would you like to close on your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. As I mentioned, it's just a transparency bill, and it provides an easy reference point to the previous year's taxes so that you're not trying to dig them out of a drawer or your file cabinet or something just to see what caused the changes in your tax rate. And I think it really gives the person an opportunity to see what you're buying. Everybody's talked about property taxes throughout this session and the fact that that's a something that's a point of concern or at least a consternation with some people as we've talked to people on the doors. And I think this really gives them an opportunity to look at where their property taxes are coming from. A lot of the people that I talked to had the belief that the state was really the one that was creating property tax increases, and you'd spend some time with them, and I think there wasn't a real good realization with a lot of people that your property taxes are coming from your county, your municipalities, and your school. And I think this will give them a better overview of that, and then they can make whatever decisions they elect to make, Mr. Chair. And with that, I hope that you give this a due pass and move it to the House floor. And thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning.
Thank you, Representative. This closes the hearing on House Bill 497. We'll next move on to House Bill 508. The short title of the bill, please.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 508, allow option to vote in school district elections.
Representative Jed Hinkle, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of committee. I'm Representative Jedediah Hinkle, and I represent House District 67. The majority of House District 67 is in the Belgrade area. Today, I bring before you House Bill 508, a bill that drives at the heart of one of our nation's founding principles, that is, no taxation without representation. While collecting signatures for House Bill 508, multiple legislators asked me, this is not already in state law? They could not believe we in the state of Montana had a system whereby we were taxing individuals and providing them no vote, no representation on ultimately what would be themselves paying the bill. This is wrong and needs to be corrected. So what does House Bill 508 do? Currently, an individual who owns property within a particular school district but resides outside of the school district cannot vote in school district bond or levy proposals where their property resides. This means that everyone else can vote to raise their property taxes, but they have no vote. As we all know, the largest portions of our property taxes go to pay for our local schools. We also know how concerned our constituents have been over property taxes. House Bill 508 creates a means by which an individual who owns property within a school district but does not reside in that district can vote, but only in school district bond or levy elections that affect their property taxes. House Bill 508 allows only one vote in the election, regardless of the number of properties an individual may own. It allows only one individual to vote if the property is jointly owned. And it mirrors fire district elections, which also currently allow an individual to vote in the fire district election, even though they reside outside of the district boundaries. So again, we already do what 508 implements in fire district elections. What House Bill 508 doesn't do is it does not allow an individual to vote on any ballot measure in a school district election other than a bond or a levy. In cases where a property owner resides outside the district, they will have a special ballot that will only include a bond or levy measures and, for example, will not contain a vote on the Board of Trustees. With that, Mr. Chair, I will stand aside for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Do we have proponents in the room?
Good morning, committee. Mr. Chairman, I am Charles Deneau, D-E-N-O-W-H, here on behalf of United Property Owners of Montana. We think this is a good property rights bill. This is a bill that goes to the bedrock of our founding of this country, making sure that those who are paying the taxes have a say in the taxes. So with that, we urge your support of the bill.
Thank you. Other proponents in the room? Other proponents? Seeing none, do we have proponents online?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. Lynn Milligan.
Okay, Ms. Milligan, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. My name is Lynn Milligan, M-I-L-L-I-G-A-N. I am a resident of Big Sky, Montana since 1990 and a real estate agent for 32 years, so I have a lot of contacts in the community. I've been fortunate to watch and live through the growth of our community and understand the expenses that go with that growth. Many of my friends and clients financially support the school district through their taxes, and although they bear the financial burden, many do not have the opportunity to express their opinion in the form of a vote on the issues. With the current system, others decide where these taxpayers' funds are spent, while the taxpayers have no voice. I believe that any party who is responsible to pay taxes is entitled to the right to vote on the issues that may increase their tax burden and to speak to how their money is spent. I find this bill to be logical, ethical, and representative of fundamental rights. I ask that you support this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Do we have other proponents online?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. If you're a proponent online and would like to speak, can you please raise your hand? Dr. Alan Shaw?
Dr. Shaw, you may proceed. I'm looking and seeing that you might be on mute right now. Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for affording me the opportunity, as well as the committee, to speak on this issue. My name is Alan Shaw, S-H-A-W. I live in Big Sky, Montana. I've been here since the late 80s. The premise of House Bill 508 is to allow persons who own real property in a district that is conducting an election, bond, or levy initiative, but who reside elsewhere in the state to vote on that issue. These initiatives have a realistic potential to raise a person's property taxes if they pass. Simply stated, this is a case of disenfranchisement. Presently, people who own property in the district but reside elsewhere cannot vote on these measures. Stop and think about what is transpiring in many states whereby those legislatures are aggressively creating laws to limit access to voting. Do we in Montana want to continue promoting a situation whereby persons cannot vote on issues that can raise their taxes? It is blatantly unfair. The potential of having one's taxes raised without having the benefit to vote on the initiative is purely taxation without representation. This is anathema to the basic principle that was the centerpiece of the gaining of independence for our country. School associations may contend that if these non-residents are allowed to vote, their initiative may not pass. Does that erroneous contention justify taking away the one right that our Constitution holds sacred, the right to vote? Should a voter be prohibited from expressing their choice simply because an institution assumes that including these voters may negatively impact them? I say no. No way should people be deprived of the right to decide what they are for or against. I insist that if a measure is worthy and beneficial to the educational process, that it will pass. If, on the other hand, the measure has little or no educational value, it should not pass. Presently, persons that rent and do not own real property in the district can vote in favor of any and all initiatives without the potential of having any financial repercussions to themselves. Please do the right thing and allow all persons who have a vested interest in the district to vote on those measures that can affect their taxes and financial well-being. Do not take away a person's guaranteed freedom of expression. Thank you for your time, and if you have questions, I'll be glad to address them.
Thank you, Dr. Shaw. Do we have other proponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Zachary Grossfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
My name is Zachary Grossfield, last name G-R-O-S-F-I-E-L-D. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. I am in favor of House Bill 508. My wife and I purchased a home in Belgrade, Montana in 2005. Since then, we have moved away from home while renting it out, then moved back to the home multiple times. We made a 2-year move to Arizona to start a business, then moved back. We moved away while I served as a Montana Highway Patrol state trooper in Columbus and Big Timber, then we moved back again. We recently moved to Big Timber, but are keeping our home in Belgrade and are currently renting it out. We have 3 school-age children whom we currently homeschool. I fully support this bill for 2 reasons. First, I believe as an American, I should have a say in how much I'm taxed and how those tax dollars are used. This goes back to the very core of our identity as Americans, as several of the proponents have said this morning. In this, I stand with other Americans who 250 years ago believed they should have a say in how much they were taxed and on how those taxes were spent. And I'll remind the chairman members of the committee that even though those tax dollars were largely spent on another continent from where they lived, it was their money and their contribution to society. Secondly, as a parent of school-age children who has moved away and then back to Belgrade several times, I believe I should have a say in these issues for the obvious reason that we could one day move back to Belgrade to our home there, and that our children could one day be in the public school system there. Even if we were to move back to Belgrade and continue homeschooling, it would still be our community, a community we've supported through our tax dollars already for 18 years since we bought the property, a community where many of our children's friends attend school, and a community we care about. For these reasons, I support House Bill 508 and ask that you would do the same as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have other proponents online?
Robin Morrison or Lauren Caldwell, if you would like to speak, please raise your hand. Mr. Chair, Robin Morrison.
Thank you, Ms. Morrison.
I'm speaking as an opponent, not a proponent, so okay. That's why I'm
all
here.
All right. Do we have other proponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have opponents to House Bill 508 in the room?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Melton with the Montana School Boards Association. My last name is spelled M-E-L-T-O-N. I'm also speaking today on behalf of several partner organizations as part of the Coalition of Advocates for Montana's Public Schools. That includes the Montana Association of School Business Officials, the Montana Quality Education Coalition, the Montana Rural Education Association, the School Administrators of Montana, and MTSBA. We've spoken with the sponsor about this bill. I think that if it were amended in particular ways, it might work. As it's introduced right now, it has a circular reference to the term elector in the bill. It says anyone who owns property is an elector as provided by 13.1.101. You go to 13.1.101 and it says an elector is anybody allowed to vote by state law. Points back to this bill. There's no qualifications. There's no requirement that you be a resident of Montana. There's no requirement that you be a citizen of the United States. We have provided a gray bill to the sponsor that would narrow this down and address some of the unintended consequences. And I think some of this came about in the form of drafting in the discussions I've had with the sponsor. I don't believe it's his intent to allow to happen what will happen under this bill or could happen under this bill. So at a conceptual level, there's really no problem with the concept of somebody that has a direct link to that community and is living in Montana, having some say in those votes. You might want to watch out for very small districts where there's a very small number of students, very small number of community members, and a very small number of property tax owners, because you could really have a distortion in the outcome of levies that would have a disproportionate influence compared to the people who are directly impacted by the passage or failure of that particular levy. Put that issue aside, because that's just sort of a footnote. The real issue here is that somebody that has no connection whatsoever might just be living in France, holding property to see how well it escalates. They may have already turned a profit when Fort Collins and Boulder took off, and maybe even Portland or someplace like that. Now they're owning a piece of property in Montana. There's another part of this bill that I think has some unintended consequences, and although the sponsor has identified in the text of the bill that if there are multiple owners, only one owner gets to vote, you can fractionalize ownership. You can split it down to a week. You could have 52 owners of 1 acre property, and it's not shared ownership. It's distinct fee simple ownership in each and every one of those fractional ownerships, potentially 52 votes for 1 acre. So there is an awful lot of room for mischief in here. We've written a gray bill that we provided to the sponsor that I think would resolve every one of those issues. Points to the definition of qualified elector in the Montana Constitution, which cuts out anybody that's not a U.S. citizen right off the bat, and who meets residency requirements under the legislation. And we've identified in the bill that you'd have to be a resident of Montana and that fractional ownership doesn't count. So with those comments, we are opposed to the bill in its written form, and we're interested in working with the sponsor on amendments that might get this over the hump. In the meantime, you should be aware as well that under two U.S. Supreme Court cases, when you create a distinction of property ownership as a condition of the right to vote, and this is longstanding authority, Cipriano and Kramer, just go look them up, it's subject to strict scrutiny, suspect classification, and significantly likely to be a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution unless it's narrowly tailored and is associated with a compelling state interest. We think with the amendments that we've drafted in here, you might be able to get over that hump, but as it's introduced, I think it absolutely fails on those grounds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do we have other opponents in the room? Other opponents in the room? Seeing none, do we have opponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Robin Morrison.
Thank you. Ms. Morrison, you may proceed.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Robin Morrison, spelled R-O-B-Y-N-M-O-R-R-I-S-O-N, and I am here today to testify on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Montana. The League of Women Voters seeks to promote an open governmental system that is representative, accountable, and responsive. House Bill 508 fails all three of these tests. HB 508 is not representative because it allows people to vote who do not reside in the school district. HB 508 is not accountable to the community served by the school board by allowing people to vote who do not reside in the community. HB 508 is not responsive to the community of people who live in the school district by allowing people to vote who do not reside in the community. Voting rights belong to people, not to property. Property owners who do not live in the community have only a single focused monetary interest at stake in school funding elections. Schools are so much more to a community than a monetary interest. This bill would extend the opportunity to vote to people with one dimension of concern, economic. This is one dimension is not representative, accountable, or responsive to the fullness of the community and its relationships to its schools. Montana's all across the state, but especially those in rural areas, recognize that their schools are the heart of their communities. Decisions affecting school financing should only be made by residents who share that heart. The League of Women Voters urges you to vote no on House Bill 508. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Morrison. Do we have other opponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Lauren Caldwell.
Ms. Caldwell, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. I apologize for not being there with you in person today. My name is Lauren Caldwell. It's C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L, and I'm here on behalf of the Montana Federation of Public Employees and the members we represent across Montana. We have both kind of foundational issues with this bill, as we have opposed similar bills in the past, and more technical issues with the bill. So first, for the foundational piece, as you well know, in the positions you sit in, your predecessors and Montanans have long decided where the line stands between where property owners get a vote and a say, and where citizens get a vote and a say. And it is really important that when it comes to community services like schools, it is restricted to the people who live in those communities and are directly affected by those decisions. As a previous testifier said, we are, by passing this bill, we open up our elections to a lot of folks who do not live in these communities, do not have children in these communities, don't have a vested stake in these communities other than having property. And that is a big concern to us, and I think it should be for anyone in Montana, recognizing that we do have a lot of out-of-state and out-of-community landowners in Montana. And we already have a system where there are people, if you own property in Helena, Montana, you're not allowed to vote for the city officials in Helena who put taxes on your property. You're not allowed to vote for county officials. You're not allowed to vote for your state legislators in Montana if you live in a different state. And if you own property here, you recognize that that comes with the literally with the territory that you cannot vote for those elected officials. This is a very slippery slope to say that property owners should be able to vote in every election in which they might be impacted by property taxes. So that's the foundational issue. The technical issues have been stated and stated well by Mr. Melton. And we actually are a little bit confused because this bill has been brought in the past in 2017. It was Senate Bill 297, and it did say that you had to have 50% ownership in order to vote. So it didn't just say if you own a property jointly, one person gets to vote. It said you had to be 50% or more. That was more clear. I think this is more muddied. And it also said that you had to be a registered Montana voter. And I think Mr. Melton well explained why that is a concern in this bill. And I'm not sure why those pieces were taken out as it moved through the process in later sessions, including this one. I think that otherwise the statements I was going to share have already been stated. The last point I'll have is we were asked by Western Native Voice, by Tahin Perez, who would have been here today but couldn't be, to just mention that they would have stood in opposition as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Caldwell. Do we have other opponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have informational witnesses in the room?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Regina Plettenberg, P-L-E-T-T-E-N-B-E-R-G, and I'm just here on behalf of the Montana Association of Clerk and Recorders, election administrators, to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Plettenberg. Do we have other informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, do we have informational witnesses online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the committee regarding House Bill 508? Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative. So can you answer the question about why you changed from the 50% and I think the other concern, I'm trying to remember what the other one was. That you had to be a registered Montana voter. Why were those taken out of your bill that you've presented today from the past? That seemed to be more clear.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative. Actually, I think we originally had it in the draft, in the original draft this session. And I think a bunch of things got changed up because we ended up moving the bill towards mirroring the fire district elections and how the fire district elections work. And somehow that 50-50 got taken out of there. because it says on line 11 on page 3, if there are two individuals who own the same real property jointly, and I think in 2017 it said 50-50 ownership, so it specified that only one of the individuals is entitled to vote under the subsection in the election. So that would be if a husband and wife, let's just say, own the property 50-50 equal, they would have to, they would designate one of them, they would go in and register on behalf of the property to vote. So, I mean, we could put the 50-50 back in there, but I do think the property jointly kind of assumes that, but it would be an easy fix.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the concern that Mr. Melton brought up about multiple owners, I mean, is with the 50-50, that doesn't deal with people who own it 33%, or, you know, and you can see how that could continue to be a problem, not just under the 50%, but as owners have split ownership, that could be a huge problem.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, Representative Konauer, so that was actually brought up, talking about the properties that you share, timeshares, that could be a situation with a timeshare. And so they did, Mr. Melton came up with some amendment language that addresses fractional properties like that, that I thought was acceptable.
Thank you.
Representative Fern.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Hinkle. Mr. Melton referenced a gray sheet that he has prepared, and I'm assuming that's really an amended version of House Bill 508. I'm wondering your impression of the gray sheet, and would that be acceptable as moving on for the committee to use or to amend?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Fern. Yeah, I actually do have it here. And yeah, it is on what would be page 2, line 28, when it says subject to subsection 3, he has inserted a qualified elector, which is a term used in law. And then he has inserted in Article 4, Section 2 of the Montana Constitution, where the definition is. I'm not sure if we absolutely have to have that, but what we do need or can clarify with, of course, is the insertion of is who is, insert, a resident of Montana and the holder of title to real property. That would clarify it. And again, it started out, when we initially had this bill drafted this session, we did have an individual who is registered voter in Montana. But then as we started looking, digging more and more into this and the fire district elections and calling the counties and finding out how they operate in that and what did they require, the proof of taxes, what does that look like, then the bill got changed up to mirror more of the fire district elections. And so it was my understanding and the drafter's understanding that by using the term elector that we were actually specifying that it is a registered voter in Montana. So we felt that was covered, but I'm not opposed at all to the changes that Mr. Melton is proposing, and I think it would be a good clarification, honestly. And then there are a couple other things in the gray bill. One of them is, again, talking about the fractional voting. The right to vote under this section is limited to properties of whole ownership without fractional interests. And then also on line 11, if there are two individuals who own the same real property jointly, he has proposed that the individual whose name appears first on the title. The only problem with that one that we saw was if it happened to be jointly owned by somebody who resided outside of the state and somebody who resided inside of the state. That language, if the person who resided outside of the state was first on the title, then that language wouldn't work. So we do believe that the current language is actually best on there to avoid that situation, but perhaps add in the 50-50 just to clarify that it's equally joined. Only one person may vote for that property.
Other questions from the committee? Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, I asked you the questions on the technical aspects of the bill, but there was some concern that was also brought forward by the opposition. And, you know, in our Constitution, it's one person, one vote. And I can see this going to the next level. You know, you're stating that because they get taxed that they get an additional vote in an additional district, essentially. The concern is, you know, would that be okay that that person then vote on a legislator in that district because the legislature sets property taxes? Would it be okay to also have a vote on the county election or in the county on the people who, you know, are your county commissioners or the city commissioners for the same reason? And, you know, we are founded on the one vote premise that each person gets their voice in the area where they reside. So can you address what you think about that concept and why your bill might not work for that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Konauer. So the way the bill is drafted, it is one person, one vote for that election. So we're not allowing two votes per person for that election. Like I say, right now, I mean, an individual who lives in Broadus could vote in a fire district election in Big Sky if they wanted to because of the property that they own there. And that would be their one vote for that one election. And as far as other elections, I can't remember. I did bring the bill in 2017. And it passed the Senate quite easily, passed the committee with bipartisan support, came over to the House. And the big question was, is because, you know, sometimes some counties have the elections department running the election and other counties have the school board, the trustees running the election. And so there was question on the language in 2017. And how to rectify that, which we tried to address in this bill. But there was a reason why we ended up narrowing it down to school board elections, and I think it was just the information that we were getting on different, you know, like the fire district elections already did it, and I can't remember what other elections we had in there, but somehow we ended up narrowing it down to school board elections to keep the bill very simple. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I have a follow-up question for Ms. Plattenberg, if I might?
You may.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Ms. Plattenberg, does it seem like something that could be administered? I'm struggling with... And so I wanted to ask you, I'm sorry, but it seems like it's going to be difficult to administer for the folks that have to run these elections, especially if it's going to be an election that's run during any of the other elections that I just talked about. So if you could please expound on that, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Konauer, I love that you asked that question. So we're here just informational, kind of neutral on the bill because we understand. We understand that people want to vote, and they do this in fire district elections and irrigation elections currently that we hold in May. The concern we do have is that more and more elections everybody's wanting everything to be held on the federal elections, right? You're hearing that. They want cities. They want, and I've heard this on city elections too, because people, and I get it, they own property. They maybe live in the rural area of their county, but their business is in the municipal, right? And they have to pay those taxes. And when a big bond comes, it really affects them, their commercial property. And we understand that. Our struggle is just that, is then everybody's wanting everything to go to the federal ballots, and to try to run these side things as well as a federal is just something you will be hearing from us, because it is doable. It absolutely is. We do it for fire districts. We do it for irrigation, but we usually run those in May. We run them mail ballot so that our poor election judges at the polls, I mean, how would they do this? So that's, you know, they fill out affidavits. I'm kind of confused about the amendments and this, the joint part. Normally, like with irrigation elections, even if you own a property in an LLC or a corporation, you can also vote. And so it's a little bit more consistent. Not totally opposed to them being a Montana resident, because that's always, or a, because we always struggle with, because then we can look them up to see if they're a voter. Whereas, but what do we do when they're not? I would assume they still get to vote. So I think that might be the intent, but I'm not sure. I haven't spoke with the sponsor. So if they're not registered, we have them fill out an affidavit, whether they're out of state or in state, not registered, but own property, like in the fire or the irrigation. And they just swear they meet those qualifications. They're 18, they own the property, they have the right to vote. You know, they're being designated, like if they're joint owners or co-owners or in a corporation or some type of trust or entity. So we're able to do that, and we keep those affidavits on record, on file, so that, you know, we show why we added them and gave them a ballot. But it is easier to do in May. So you're right, if a school board runs it on a federal election ballot, that's going to be much, much harder, and especially for some of these large counties. So thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the bill sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, my apologies. I have a couple questions. First, if my wife and I jointly own property, and I understand Mr. Melton may have an amendment that would address this, but maybe not surprisingly, we often split our ballot. Who's the arbiter if my wife and I disagree on who should vote and maybe how we should vote? First question, Mr. Chair.
Your wife would be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thane. That's none of my business. I don't know. I'm not going to pick sides here.
No, thank you.
But what I will say is that is something that we left up to the owners of the real property to decide. And I don't think it's the county's business. It's certainly not the Board of Trustees' business. And that's why we worked on making this bill more doable than it was in 2017. If you look on line 4, it talks about pursuant to 20-20-401, and sorry, this is on page 3, line 4. The elector shall provide the proof of payment of taxes no later than 60 days prior to the election. So you were coming in way ahead of time with either with the Board of Trustees, as the next line down states, the county election administrator, if the Board of Trustees requests. So if they want the county to conduct the election, then it will be, you would show your proof of taxes with the county election administrator. And the county election administrator agrees to conduct an election, so then you would show it to, on line 8, the Board of Trustees, and you would bring it to the Board of Trustees 60 days before. So they will have record of who it is, whoever you decide between you or your wife, and that would be the person registered to vote for that property in that election. And I did, and if I may, Mr. Chair, because this kind of goes into that last question, I did talk with a former election administrator, said, hey, is this possible? Can we do this? And the answer was like, oh yeah, we can do this. We already do it. We split ballots up and send them different places. And some ballots have, you know, some elections and candidates on it, and another ballot may have some of those and something else, just depending on where the person lives. But yeah, so anyway, I'll just leave it at that. Oh, and I did talk with the Secretary of State's office too and asked them also if this was possible, and it was an absolute question. No question about it. Yes, it is. But anyway, your next question.
Thank you. Follow-up? Mr. Chair, Representative, if then my wife and I are absentee owners of two different parcels in that county, would we both get to vote under a situation like that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in line 9, which would be that subsection 3, sorry, my bill might actually be different than your bill because I printed it off the internet, but page 3, sub 3, it says an individual who votes as allowed in subsection 2 may only vote once in the election regardless of the number of properties the individual owns in the district. So if both of you are on the title, then there is only one property that you can use to vote on in that election.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
But again, if it's two separate parcels and maybe she's listed first on one title, I'm listed first on the other, do we each get to vote in such a circumstance?
Mr. Chair, no, because if you're both on the title, you're both on the title. You designate one person, but you still own both properties. You can only vote on one property in that election, period.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Malone.
Mr. Chair, question for the sponsor. Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle, in my part of the world, we're having a hard time passing school elections because we're getting people moved in from out of state that have no connection to the school and their automatic no vote. Is this going to exasperate this thing and put these school districts out of business?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't believe so at all. In fact, in 2017, we had testimony that individuals had purchased property within the school district area. They currently lived outside the school district, but they had children that were, 3-4 years of age, and they were planning on moving into the district and their children attending public school. We have the example of the individual who testified today who has moved in and out of their house for a number of years, rented it out, come back, moved back in, and their children are of school age now. And should they move back in again and their children attend public school, then that would be something that they would want to be supporting the whole time that they own this property, and they have been a big part of the community. But the question really comes down is, are we going to say that we're going to strip somebody of their right to vote and their right to representation to vote just because we think they're going to vote no? Because we think they're going to vote no? I mean, this is a democracy, right? I mean, we don't set elections in such a way where we only get one result. We allow people to have that voice, a yes or a no, and I think it's not just to take that away because we might perceive that they may vote no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fern.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Hinkle, stay there. Just looking for your reaction to potentially this argument. So when we talk about fire districts and irrigation districts, as it was brought out, and the right for folks out of district to vote for those, one might say they have a direct cause and effect in a sense they're going to get a service for their vote. For example, you have a house, and you don't live there, but you're in the fire district. What you get in return is potentially putting a fire out. And so I can understand that relationship. And in irrigation districts as well, it may have to deal with the future vitality of your hay or whatever. Could you comment on that, on my thoughts? Versus a school district, which may be more vague.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's hard to comment on that because I think it's different for each person. Like the examples that I just listed, the way that they look at it is we have children coming into this school in the future, so that is a direct interest to them, even though they may not reside in the district at that time. And you have other people who there may not be as much of a direct connection. I know a number of individuals who own rentals, and they're renters and have good relationships with their renters, and they may vote on behalf of their renters, and their renters have school children. I mean, it's hard to really answer that question without being everybody and having their own interests, I think. It's a good question.
Representative Hinkle, I'd like to bring this focus back onto property taxes. This is just as it doesn't have to do with children, doesn't have to do with renters and what your community interests are. This is being able to vote on a property, a person that has property and is paying property taxes is allowed to vote on bond or levy issues with the school. So let's try to keep it focused on that. As property tax owner, property owners that are paying property taxes on the property they own, right? So if I can just ask a question, if a person lives in a county and they own property in two different school districts that are both running election levies for the school district, does that property owner allowed to vote in school district A as well as school district B elections on property
taxes? Mr. Chair, absolutely. Yeah,
okay,
because yeah, they own property there, and that would be that one vote for that election, that particular election.
So they would be allowed to vote on school levies in multiple school districts?
Correct.
Thank you. Representative Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor, please. Mr. Chair, Representative, would you be required to register as a voter in the county where that parcel is located, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, and that's the point of the bill, is that you might live outside of the county. You might live in Broadus and want to vote in an election that is in Big Sky. You're, of course, not going to reside in that. So that's why in would be page one. Let's see here. Oh, it would be page 2, subsection 2. It says, subject to subsection 3, an elector is defined in 3-1-101. And that definition of an elector is, it doesn't specify that you have to live within the county. So that makes the bill possible to where you're allowing an individual who may reside outside of that school district or outside of that county but has property within the county to be able to vote on that election. Or within that school district.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative.
Representative Konauer, do you have one more question?
Yep, one more question, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
For the sponsor, of course. Sorry. And I wanted to follow up on what you just said, because you talked about the renter and the owner. And in this case, the renter would be voting on it, and so would the owner of the property in that case. Is that so?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is so. So the renter would vote in the election based on that they live and reside within the district, and the property owner would be voting on the election because their property taxes are being raised without their vote. So to allow them to vote and have a say in an election that may result in an increase in their taxes, and to give them that representation.
Just the last follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Just on that statement. And so it would be, the owner would be flowing through the property taxes to the renter. They do that, otherwise they don't make a profit. So the cost of the rental is being paid by the renter of the property taxes. So there's a dichotomy there about who's actually paying the property taxes on a rental situation, and allowing people to vote when they're not really paying it, their renter is, might be another like glitch in the process.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in some respects I agree with you, in other respects I don't. I know a person who owns rental in Bozeman, and in a matter of I think it was 2019 to 2022, something like that, their property taxes increased by like $15,000. And their rent didn't increase. They didn't increase their renter's rent to cover that amount. So you can't just say that the renter is paying all the property taxes of the landlord. That's not true. They probably pay some of it, and some of it is factored into it, and is one of the reasons why rental costs are going up and up and up. Home values plus, you know, every bond and levy seems to get passed, at least in Gallatin County, and then the renters are, you know, upset because their rent keeps going up, and the property owners are upset because their property taxes keep going up, if they have no say to it. I mean, honestly, I mean, you think of it, if it's a valid issue, and it will pass, it will pass. But if it's something that needs to be rejected by the people, that plays into those high rent costs. And so I would agree with you, but I would also disagree with you. You can't, it's not a one-to-one transfer of the money.
Seeing no further questions from the committee, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So one thing that I do want to reiterate is that generally these elections are, if I can find my notes here, generally these elections are done in May. They're done as separate elections. They're generally not combined with a general election or with a primary election. However, if they are, it would just be done the same exact way as you split up ballots in those elections, just the same way. So, you know, an individual may be voting, everyone's voting on statewide elections, but then only some people are voting in House District 67. And so it's up to the clerk and recorder and the school board. And that's why we put that time limit in there, that these individuals have to be registered 60 days in advance to make sure that those individuals were on record, so that when the ballots are printed, you would print a ballot. If it was, let's just say, only a school district election in May, they would print a ballot that did not have the Board of Trustees on the ballot. It would only contain the bond or levy language. And then those ballots would be sent to those people who are on record. So I just want to reiterate that. And then there was, I can't remember exactly the reference, I think it was talking about representation, but you know, if we don't want to give these property owners representation and we're fine with just raising their taxes without their say, then maybe we should come up with a system to move taxes away from property taxes, and we won't have to deal with the misrepresentation. And I see Representative Firm smiling there, and he's already thinking that would be a heavy lift that probably wouldn't happen. But anyway, I just want to make that point that right now we are taxing these people, and they have no say. So, and I thought I had a closing here, and apparently, oh, here it is right here. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the ability to vote on measures that may affect your finances should never be stripped from a person. It is a fundamental principle, and one that our early colonies went to war over, that a person should never be taxed without a voter representation. As pointed out in this hearing, we currently have a system in other elections where those who live outside the respective districts are still able to represent themselves on property they own within the boundaries of the district. House Bill 508 is only expanding this measure to school district elections. And with that, I will be talking more with Mr. Milton on that gray bill amendments, and probably talk with members of the committee to see where they are in there and see what the committee prefers. But with that, I just urge a due pass on House Bill 508. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hinkle. That closes the hearing on House Bill 508. Before we open the hearing on Senate Bill 121, I'd just like to make a comment. Maybe I can't, but I think I will. When people testify and they say use the term unintended consequences, that always perks my ears up, because that means that's sort of like saying and a bunch of other bad stuff. You know, and unintended consequences is undefined. So if in a testimony somebody has unintended consequences, I would expect them to give me some examples of what those consequences might be. We'll move on now to Senate Bill 121. Senator Becky Beard, welcome back to Taxation Committee. Can we hear the short title of the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 121, reduce top marginal income tax rate and increase EITC.
Senator Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. committee members. I'm really glad to be back before you. This is feels like home week all in one morning. Chair Fielder, members, my name is Becky Beard, B-E-A-R-D, Senate District 40, covering parts of Lewis and Clark and Powell counties. I'm here today to introduce Senate Bill 121, revising the individual income tax laws, reducing the top income tax rate, and increasing the earned income tax credit. It would apply to tax years after December 31st of this year. This bill reflects the governor's goal to continue decreasing the state's top income tax rate from the 6.5 down to 5.9 to help make Montanans a more competitive place for our economy and for our standard of living. We intend to reduce the drag of tax burdens on the middle class. At the same time, Senate Bill 121 details an increase in the refundable earned income tax credit from 3% to 10%. Make no mistake, this is increasing the EITC more than three times. There is a fiscal note providing an analysis of these revisions. The average change in individual tax liability is a reduction of $283. Overall, nearly 60% of households will have their tax liability decrease under the proposed rate reduction and EITC increase, and no taxpayers will have their tax liability increase. Mr. Chair, I'll close after we hear from proponents, opponents, and informational witnesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Do we have proponents in the room for Senate Bill 121?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Glenn Opel, Policy Director for the Governor. I have a handout, if I may.
Please hand it out.
Again, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Mr. Opel, your last name is spelt.
Yeah, O-P-P-E-L. Sorry about that. So today, Montanans are facing two opposing forces. We have inflation levels that we haven't seen in 40 years, and we also have a budget surplus that's unprecedented in Montana history. The governor is keenly sensitive to both the challenges and the opportunities presented by this paradox. The citizens of Montana need help with their everyday expenses as the price of everything is strapping their budgets. He also believes that the surplus is the byproduct of hardworking Montanans. It's their money, and as much as possible, we should return it to them. The governor was committed to these principles last session, helping Montanans with their everyday expenses and returning excess revenues. He proposed Senate Bill 159, which lowered the top marginal rate from 6.9 to 6.75%. He also supported Senate Bill 399, which simplified the code and reduced the top marginal rates from to 4.7 and 6.5%, and that starts in tax year 2024. But there's more work to do to lower the rates to make Montana more competitive with other states, because there's a lot of states out that are busy slashing their income tax rates. Even with the successes last session in cutting income tax rates, Montana still has the 14th highest top marginal tax rate in the U.S., according to the Tax Foundation. We're still not competitive nationally, and we're definitely not tax competitive regionally. South Dakota and Wyoming don't have an income tax. North Dakota has a 2.9% rate. Idaho is at 6%. Both Utah and Colorado have flat tax rates below 5%. And Arizona is at 4.5%. And recently, Iowa, Georgia, and Mississippi adopted flat tax rates. This trend is going to continue in the states into the future. So we have a great opportunity to do better and provide much-needed tax relief to Montanans struggling with high inflation. That's why the governor has worked with Senator Beard to lower the top marginal income tax rate established by Senate Bill 399 from 6.5 to 5.9%, while also increasing the state earned income tax credit match from 3% to 10%. The EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit, is designed to incentivize work, because in order for beneficiaries to qualify, they have to have a job and they have to earn an income. So Senate Bill 121 will be the largest tax reduction in state history and will translate into about $188 million in income tax relief over the coming biennium, and then more than $170 million annually at full implementation. Senate Bill 121 will translate to an average of $450 in tax relief for every household. The brief that I handed out to you shows what sort of tax relief the constituents in your individual counties will receive over the biennium. The governor believes not only that individuals are the best stewards of their money, of the money they earn, he also believes that permanent tax relief leads to long-term economic growth and job creation. He also knows that tax relief has to be done in a fiscally responsible manner. That's why the budget he proposed, the balanced budget that he proposed, significantly boosts the state's rainy day fund, invests in critical services and infrastructure, and pays off the state's debt. The governor trusts the taxpayer, and he urges you to as well. He strongly recommends that you pass on Senate Bill 121. And Mr. Chair, I was asked by the Montana Economic Development Association and the Billings Chamber of Commerce to register their support as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Opel. Do we have other proponents in the room?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Story, STORY, Montana Taxpayers Association. We support the bill also. I think the representative of the governor's office laid out most of the pertinent points of talking about this bill, so we won't repeat those. But in looking at the revenue stream, the individual income taxes generated for Montana over the past number of years, it's been on a steady incline and a fairly rapid growth rate. I was just looking here in the revenue estimating document in 2018, which is only about 5 years ago, the income tax generated about $1.3 billion. In 2023, it's going to be a little over $2 billion, and it grows from there. So we believe even with the reduction, you're going to have adequate income tax revenue for the state, and we believe that, as history shows, even with tax reductions, generally the number of dollars collected goes up following tax reductions also. So we think that this is a good move for the reasons that the sponsor and the governor's office have talked about, to keep Montana in the game of income tax rate competitiveness.
Thank you, Mr. Story. Do we have other proponents in the room for Senate Bill 121?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Wade, WADE, here on behalf of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. Without repeating everything, we echo the sentiments of the sponsor, Mr. Opel, and Mr. Story. We think this is a good move to make Montana more competitive, and we'd urge your support.
Thank you, Mr. Wade. Do we have other proponents in the room?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nicole Rolf, R-O-L-F. I represent the Montana Farm Bureau Federation, and we also would like to support Senate Bill 121. It provides tax relief to a wide range of taxpayers, including farmers and ranchers. And you know, in the farming and ranching business, there's a lot of factors that play into our income, with weather, commodity prices, all of those things. But regardless of whether it's a good year or a bad year, we appreciate income tax reduction and would ask for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rolf. Other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Jason Todd Hunter, last name is T-O-D-H-U-N-T-E-R. I represent the Montana Logging Association and our members who log and haul logs in Montana. I'd like to thank the governor's office and Senator Beard for a good base of legislation here. It's going to put a little bit more cash in a logger's paycheck, and both for the owner and the employee. So it's a good stroke of business. We urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Todd Hunter. Other proponents for the bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Rhonda Wiggers, W-I-G-G-E-R-S, here on behalf of the over 4,000 members of the NFIB in Montana. Small businesses across the state can use the help of income tax relief, as can our home, as can our employees. We would hope you give this a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wiggers. Other proponents in the room?
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Dwayne Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, and I'm the executive director for the Montana Trucking Association. We also would like to thank the sponsor and the governor's office for a good bill. In Montana, there's over 21,000 jobs in the trucking industry that would benefit from this, so we're supportive of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Do we have other proponents in the room? Other proponents? Seeing none, do we have proponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have opponents in the room for Senate Bill 121?
Thank you, Chair Fielder, members of the committee. I'm Rose Bender, B-E-N-D-E-R, representing Montana Budget and Policy Center. We rise in opposition to Senate Bill 121. And I have a, with permission, I have a handout. Need them. We rise in opposition to Senate Bill 121. First, cutting the income tax rate to this degree, even with the small increase to the earned income tax credit, goes largely to the wealthiest Montanans. The handout that's coming around shows average tax cut by income level. This is five groups of income levels. The top three is broken into the top 1%, top 5%, and 10%. You can see that the top 1% of Montanans will get nearly $6,000 in tax cuts with this bill, while everyone else will get much less. According to an analysis by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, 74% of the tax cuts in Senate Bill 121 will go to the richest 20% of Montanans. The fiscal note shows that cutting the top income tax rate will cost the state roughly $150 million each year once fully in effect, while the increase to the earned income tax credit will cost only $11 million, or about 6% of the total cost of the package. While bolstering the earned income tax credit is an important step in supporting families living on lower wages, it is worth considering the total cost of each of these components and the size of a tax cut at different income levels. Middle-income families will receive very little with this tax cut, and the vast majority of benefit goes to the wealthiest. You may have heard arguments that as our top income tax rate phases in at such a low level, everyone will benefit. Because the rate cut is for each dollar over that threshold, which will be $41,000 for joint filers and half that for single filers in 2024, the biggest benefit goes to higher income individuals. Second, Senate Bill 121 will be a sustained large loss of income tax revenue. Revenues are high today, the majority of which is a result of temporary federal stimulus and inflation. This bill, in addition to many others proposed this session, will result in a significant cut to our tax base. This bill is included in a package of $1 billion in tax cuts over just this biennium. These proposals will have long-term ramifications on our ability to invest in our fellow Montanans through things like services for our seniors and people living with disabilities. Third, this income tax cut is being proposed before we have even begun to see the impact of Senate Bill 399, passed last session, on our revenues. Senate Bill 399, as many of you may recall, shifted our tax base to be more closely aligned with the federal government while cutting our top income tax rate. This bill will not go into effect until 2024. When Senate Bill 407 was passed in 2003, which also cut income taxes, the fiscal note estimated that it would cost $26 million in 2005, but it actually cost $100 million, or about four times the estimated cost. Montanans would be better served by awaiting the results of changing our tax structure before cutting tax rates even further. Finally, as reflected in the fiscal note, Senate Bill 121 is expected to cost nearly $180 million each year once fully phased in. Evidence has shown that the ultimate cost of cutting income taxes is not offset by new economic growth. We can look at study after study that tell us this, and we can look at other states that have cut taxes, and we can look to our own experiences here in Montana from 2003. Thank you for your opportunity to comment on this important bill. Please vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents to the bill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Eric Burke. I'm here today representing the Montana Federation of Public Employees. As you all know, we represent a cross-section of public employees across the state of Montana, from teachers and educational aides in our public schools to highway patrol members to correctional officers and probation and parole officers, people doing public safety and preserving Montana's highways. Public services that are essential to Montana communities. We stand in opposition because MFPE has long held that reducing major reductions to our income tax system diminish the adequacy, the long-term adequacy of our revenue system to support the very services that you all deal with and that you all approve for the state of Montana. This tax cut in particular would reduce the adequacy of revenue in a major way, over $300 million per biennium. And this is something that we should all take pause with and consider: what are the ongoing obligations that the state has? What are the investments the state needs to make over time? And can these be balanced with tax relief? MFPE clearly realizes tax relief is going to happen this session, but a cut of this magnitude coupled with the other major tax bills that you have before you are going to be problematic into the future. Montana has been a boom and bust economy throughout almost all of our history. We are riding an economic boom right now in many ways. The infusion of federal money has helped that, but we've also been on the upswing. When Montana hits a downswing, we've historically had problems with our revenue systems where we've had to go in, cut budgets, cut services, not be able to provide the adequacy of revenue for our communities that we would like to do. And we believe this bill will lead to more of that over time. I also wanted to point out that the competitiveness discussion, everyone should remember, Montana does not have a general sales tax. And when we're comparing to other states, we think that's something that all of you should remember, is that when we're trying to be competitive with every other state around us or across the country, Montana's lack of a general sales tax really does mean that we are more reliant on property and income tax. So that's just going to be a fact, whether we're 14th or 8th or 35th, we are going to still be reliant on income tax, and reductions are going to cut into the adequacy of revenue that you all can then make appropriations to the communities for the vital services that our communities need. We really appreciate your consideration and thoughtfulness as you deal with these issues, and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Do we have other opponents in the room? Other opponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sean Rager. That's R-E-A-G-O-R. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Human Rights Network. We stand in opposition to this bill. As you've heard from previous opponents, it will do serious damage to the future of Montana's economy by creating a permanent cut for a temporary as a result of a temporary surplus. In addition to that, we have serious concerns about any bill that increases income inequality. Part of what's so important about an economy is to have flexibility so that those who are making lower incomes have flexibility and availability to rise up into those larger incomes. Well, increasing increasing inequality causes issues with that and prevents people from being able to move up within our economic structure. And so for these reasons, we strongly oppose this bill. We think that it'll do a lot of harm to lower and middle income families in Montana and make it more difficult for our economy to continue to grow. Thank you. And if it pleases the chair, I'd ask to be excused. I have another hearing.
Are there any questions for the speaker? You may be excused.
Thank you.
Other opponents to the bill? Seeing no opponents in the room, do we have opponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Jackie Helt.
Ms. Helt, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jackie Helt, H-E-L-T as in Tom, and I'm the Montana State Director with SEIU 775. We're a union representing 45,000 long-term care workers providing quality in-home care, nursing home care, behavioral health, and adult day health services in Montana and Washington. Senate, we believe that Senate Bill 121 will be a sustained large loss of income tax revenue for our state. We believe that Montana should be investing in things like affordable housing, childcare, mental health services, our senior and long-term care, behavioral health and disability services. We have real and ongoing human infrastructure needs. By example, a provider rate study commissioned by the governor's administration at the direction of the 2021 legislature and released in 2022 revealed some of Montana's provider rates were underfunded by as much as 60%. Even if we find a way to remedy some of these shortfalls in the near futures, the needs will not go away. As we all know, we are living in a rapidly aging state. And as you've previously heard, middle-income families receive little benefit with this tax cut, and the vast majority of the benefit goes to the wealthiest of Montanans. We respectfully ask for a no vote on Senate Bill 121.
Thank you, Ms. Helt. Do we have other opponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. John Ellingson.
Mr. Ellingson, you may proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is John Ellingson, E-L-L-I-N-G-S-O-N. I am the vice chair of the board of Big Sky 55 Plus. We are an organization of Montanans 55 and older who are mobilizing our voices, experience, and power to make our state a better place for current and future generations and to advance the human dignity of all. Briefly, I want to make several points in opposition to this bill. First, our tax laws create a financial structure for the operation of state government. It is important that this structure provides funding that is adequate to provide for future public services that our residents need to enjoy happy and meaningful lives in our beautiful state. It must also be adequate to meet the requirements of an uncertain future. When the existing tax structure is altered, it must be done for the purpose that enhances the public good. And when the future tax revenue stream is diminished, it is incumbent upon those who wish to diminish the future revenue to justify their proposal. Does the proposal enhance the public good, or does it create a structural imbalance that would prevent the state from responding to existing or unanticipated needs of our residents? Let me cut right to the chase. There is no conclusive evidence that lowering the tax liability of the wealthy will stimulate our local economy. On the contrary, the state has looked at this issue before. In 2003, the state passed Senate Bill 407 that cut almost in half the top marginal rate on income. This bill was justified by the assertion that it would stimulate the economy. This justification is repeated by the proponents of this bill. In 2013, the Department of Revenue investigated this assertion and released a study by Dan Dodds, D-O-D-D-S. Dodds concluded that the evidence of job creation was ambiguous at best. With this bill and its companion bills, future state revenue will be cut by hundreds of millions of dollars a year. It makes no sense whatsoever to send thousands of dollars to our wealthiest who earn over $1.6 million a year. That's the top 1% of our state. It makes no sense whatsoever to send these folks thousands of dollars in the vain but unsubstantiated hope that somehow this will create more good-paying jobs for the workers of the state. What's even worse is when the legislature then turns around and refuses to fund essential long-term care for our elders because we can't afford it. I do not comprehend this mentality. This bill amounts to a looting of the public tax base for the purpose, for the benefit of the wealthy, and to the detriment of the common men and women of the state. For all these reasons, I urge that the committee vote no on Senate Bill 121. I appreciate the opportunity to present these views to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have other opponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Terza Asbell?
Ms. Asbell, you may proceed.
Chair Fielder and members of the committee, my name is Tirza Asbell, spelled T-I-R-Z-A-A-S-B-E-L-L, and I am here representing Montana Women Vote in opposition of SB 121. Montana Women Vote is a member-based organization that works with low-income women and families across the state. As written, the bill offers little benefit to low- and middle-income Montanans. For qualifying families, the state's EITC increase would amount to at most a few hundred dollars annually, and Montana Women Vote would like to see a tax refund that is aimed at helping a majority of working families rather than the wealthiest in the state. The earned income tax credit in this bill, raised from 3% to 10%, is one we support that would like to see it closer to the federal standard. The EITC is a tax credit with a wide breadth of benefit. It lifts working families out of poverty, increases overall success for both children and parents, and has a phase out that decreases as families are able to increase their earnings. The credit is spent in local economies on basics like food and childcare, essentials that Montana families across the state are struggling to afford. I would also like to uplift Montana Budget and Policy Center's analysis and consequence of reducing the top income rate. Montana has already experienced what happens when the top income rate is eliminated. Many likely remember the painful cuts that were made during the 2017 session. During a time of economic recovery, it remains vital to practice fiscal prudence and maintain a positive revenue balance going into the next biennium and beyond. I encourage the committee to consider instead what the surplus can do for all Montana families. In addition to expanding the EITC, the state could create funding to support families in areas like childcare, housing, and a paid sick leave fund. Rather than cutting hundreds of millions of dollars in the upcoming biennium, let's invest in Montana families. I strongly urge a no vote on SB 121. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Asbell. Do we have other opponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Wren Greenery.
Mr. Greenery, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Wren Greeny, G-R-E-A-N-E-Y, with the Montana Food Bank Network. We are Montana's statewide food bank, helping to source and distribute food through a network of local food pantries and other programs across the state. We urge you to oppose Senate Bill 121 because it will lessen Montana's ability to adequately invest in the public programs that so many in our state need. This legislature is still working to put together a budget for the next biennium. The budget process includes ongoing conversations about what is needed to keep Montana on track. And it's important that the legislature take the time needed to assess the needs of the state before taking on a significant revenue cut like the one in this bill. The bill will make it harder to maintain essential public programs in the long term, programs that Montana families and communities depend on. At Montana Food Bank Network, we see and hear from the people we serve. The costs of housing and food are at historically high levels, and the pressures on working class families are mounting. So many Montanans are working hard and struggling to keep up with the basics of survival. Our state should be prioritizing finding ways to offer targeted relief to these Montanans. This bill would also make our tax code less fair. Those with incomes near the median would receive a negligible amount compared to the wealthiest. Those at lower income levels would see an increased state EITC, but the long-term harm of this bill outweighs the small increase to the EITC. Please vote no on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Greenery. Do we have other opponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have informational witnesses in the room?
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Aaron McNay, MCNAY, and I'm with the Department of Revenue, and I'll try and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Do we have other informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, do we have informational witnesses online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the committee? Representative Kazemeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Rose Bender.
Ms. Bender, are you available on? Oh, I'm sorry. You're
right here. Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Representative Kazemeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bender, if this bill does not pass, what do these lower to middle income people get?
Chair, Representative Kazemeyer, if this bill is to pass, the folks near the median income will get around $50.
No, Mr. Chair, sorry. I asked if this bill does not pass, what do these lower to middle income people get?
Chair, Representative Kazemeyer, they would get the tax benefits from the rest of the governor's tax cuts that are moving quickly through this session, which include income tax rebates and property tax rebates.
Follow up?
Mr. Chair, Rose Bender, but if this bill does not pass, that means this lower income people won't get anything, right?
Chair, Representative Kazemeyer.
The question relates just to this bill.
I suppose if this bill didn't pass, they would get the EITC at the federal level and the one in current law.
Okay, but no increase, right?
Not under this bill unless you pass the bill that Representative Kirk Carpenter proposed increasing the EITC.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Konauer.
For Ms. Bender, if I might, please.
Chair, Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Bender. I was struck by your calculation about the benefit that is included in this bill. We're fully phased in. 6% of the bill's effect goes to the lower income folks in the state of Montana versus the 1%. Can you expound on the differences in those two benefits in this bill? I might be inclined to vote for something like this if the benefit were equal in the monies that go to the EITC versus what is going to the top 1%. So if we could just talk about that specific in this bill on how that would actually work for Montana families in that lower income area.
Chair, Representative Konauer, if you look at the fiscal note, you can see in Assumptions 5 and Assumption 7, it splits the revenue differences into Assumption 5 shows over $150 million in 2027 going to the reduction in the top income tax rate, and Assumption 7 shows in 2027 just over $11 million going to the increase in the earned income tax credit. So that is about 6%. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Bender. And so the effect of this bill is very one-sided as far as the benefit that would go to the lowest income Montanans. You were about to say something about
Mr. Chair, is there a question in there?
Yes.
Mr.
Chair, I am getting to the question. I was right there. the benefit that goes to the highest income versus the benefit that goes to the lowest income Montanans.
Thank you, Chair Fielder, Representative Konauer. If you refer to the handout I passed out, yes, the highest income Montanans, the top 1%, those earning over $572,000 a year, will get nearly $6,000 annually from this bill, where everyone else gets, well, those around the median get around $50. Those at lower income levels will see an increased EITC, but at most that's a few hundred dollars. And you can see on average it's much less than that in the 50s and the 30s. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Bob Story, please.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Story, my understanding is one of the premise of reducing the income tax is to make us regionally competitive. I note on the chart that was provided, we have three states in the region, Idaho, New Mexico, Utah, that have state sales tax. So my question is, if we were to look at the aggregate of tax liability in all these states regionally, including property tax, sales tax, income tax, do you have an understanding of how those states would rank compared to Montana for overall tax burden? Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thane, I don't have it at hand, but the Tax Foundation puts out a ranking of how states rank. Their system is skewed because it ranks states higher that only have two major taxes as opposed to three. So Montana ranks pretty high on that, on their particular ranking method, because we don't have a sales tax. But other states like Idaho that have all three taxes also rank high. So it just depends on the system of who's doing the ranking and how they weight the different tax types and that are in a state.
Follow up. So again, I don't know that there's a clear authority that we would refer to identify those rankings. One that I looked at online would identify New York as the greatest tax burden, which is no surprise to anybody. But as you go down the rankings, New Mexico, which is on the chart, is listed as 12th, Utah 15th, Idaho 40th, Montana 43rd. Does that sound reasonable to you in terms of overall tax burden, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, Story. If you would clarify. So your ranking number one is highest taxes per maybe capita or something on down. Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen various studies that show, you know, Montana, even though people think their property taxes are high, they're in the midstream. Most of our taxes are kind of mid-range on, depending again on how you, per capita, North Dakota is a really high per capita state, but that's because all their oil income comes in and they divide that by people. So rankings are depending on who makes them.
Thank you, Mr. Story, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Other questions? Seeing none. Oh, I'm sorry. Does somebody have a question?
Mr. Chair, for Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kastmeyer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burke, you talked about a sales tax, so would you support a bill with a general sales tax?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kastmeyer, MFPE does not have a resolution on a general sales tax right now. I can tell you that we have in the past, as if previous organization. It depended on the situation, but back in 1992, the former Montana Education Association did support a general sales tax.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Seeing none. Senator, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for a great hearing. I just was going through my bill, Mr. Chair, and I didn't see that a reference to sales tax being a part of this bill. So just to clarify, no, it's not included. I did want to, being a of the mindset that if we have a strong and growing middle class, we will have a stronger and healthier economy. And if we're putting more dollars into our individual pockets, we have the opportunity to bolster the middle class. We can spend our money the way we see fit. We can invest in our companies. We can start new companies. We can hire new personnel. We can go out and buy durable goods and services that contribute to our overall economic welfare. One of the things that we do with this kind of tax cut is to incentivize people back into the labor force, which will incentivize people to migrate away from their dependency on public services. And if we can migrate people away from dependency on public services, we can cut costs in those industries and go back, we can revert to a private pay industry, which is going to give us more direct say in how we have goods and services provided to us. We believe in the private sector. We believe in our citizens' ability to make decisions without government overlay on everything. We believe in you, our citizens of the state of Montana. So, with that, Mr. Chair and committee members, I ask for a due pass on this very important bill. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes the hearing on Senate Bill 121. The next bill up would be Senate Bill 124 with Senator Greg Hertz present as a sponsor. I don't know exactly where Senator Hertz might be at the moment.
He has another bill.
We have another bill that we could do, but that sponsor is not here either. I'd like to take a short recess for 5 minutes, please. And we'll reconvene in about 5 minutes. Thank you.
Okay, I'm coming.
So you're going from 6.75 down to 5.9% on the highest income. So that's what does that for that one. And then the benefit of the EITC stuff is the stuff that's down here.
Let me think about that again.
Okay. So it's the 0.8% change that gives that benefit to that highest area. And then that
6.5.
Yeah, 6.75 actually, because that was last Kurtz bill from Kurtz that went from 6.9 down to 6.75, and it actually hasn't taken effect yet.
We're now down to 6.5.
It hasn't taken effect yet.
But it will.
But it hasn't. But and then
the fiscal note is based on 6.5.
Yes.
So this thing should be based on 6.5.
I think it is, so it's even worse.
So
6.5 down to 5.9, that's the effect.
Then, we're talking 6.5 to 5.9.
That's the effect.
0.6% decrease, right?
Because it's based on the fiscal note, which you're saying already takes that into consideration. Yeah. So well, that takes that into consideration.
So you come out with $5,922.
It's in the fiscal.
Go ahead.
In assumption number one, the first rate is 4.7 and the second rate is 6.5. And so in assumption two, it says the rate goes from 6.5, which is what you just said, to 5.9. That's what this is based on. That's what that is based on.
What is a decrease of 0.6%.
Yeah, so you're right.
So take 0.6% times 572.
But it's that plus. So that's not an accurate, that's not an accurate number.
Why is it not accurate?
Because the 500K, it goes from 500K up to somebody making $1 billion.
Well, I'm saying, if I make 500,000, how much am I going to save?
I'm going to call the House Taxation Committee back to order, please. We're going to have to shuffle some bills around here based on who's here and who isn't here to sponsor. So we're going to have a hearing now on House Bill 515. And we'll do Senate Bill 124 when that sponsor is available. So House Bill... House Bill 151 is to revise property tax payment procedures. Representative Carlson, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Jennifer Carlson, C-A-R-L-S-O-N, from House District 69, and I'm here with a bill that some of you have seen before. This is a very simple bill. It is a bill, first of all, it's a longer bill than it was last year, because one of the things that is in the first several pages of the bill is just removing a reference to 5 p.m. Since a lot of people are doing payments online, it really doesn't matter if it's 5 p.m. because they're not going into the office. So a lot of the references on pages that don't seem like they have anything, that's the only change. The substantive change in this bill is to allow citizens to pay their oldest due property tax first, which is a standard across the country, across every bill we pay. If you have a credit card bill, if you have a mortgage, if you have a school bill, whatever, you pay on the oldest bill first. Why that's important in property tax is because if your property tax is 3 years in arrears, then you can move to the procedures that counties must go through to lose your home. So what the benefit of this bill is to Montana citizens is to allow them to get out of jeopardy of losing their home by making payments on their oldest due property tax first, so that they will no longer be 3 years in arrears. If it comes to a point where a person can only afford to pay 1 year, it is fair to allow them to pay the oldest due property tax first, so that they have the ability to come current over time. And it should be difficult to take someone's home, and this will accomplish that. This bill has been brought before this committee several times. So if you've been on this committee a while, you should be familiar. There's not a bait and switch. There's nothing different about it. Some of the language has been added some more clarification due to some of the opponents in the past to this bill who have believed that this bill would allow people to never come current and use it as an excuse to not pay their property tax, which I would said last session and I will say again, is not common sense. One of the other oppositions to this bill was that this makes it harder to take a person's home. I believe it should be very difficult to take a person's home. I also know for a fact the counties don't want most people's homes. They just want their tax money. So this bill, allowing a person to pay their oldest due tax, allowing them to pay a partial payment, which I will tell you how the partial payment came into this bill last session, was a senator in our body went to pay his tax the day after it was due because he was out of town the day it was due, and he took a check for some $20,000, $30,000 to pay his taxes, and they would not accept it because it was 1 day late. And they could not take a partial payment. And what is considered a partial payment includes half a year's taxes. So we're not talking about I want to go in and pay $50 a week. Any payment that is not a full year past the date of the half year is considered partial. So keep in mind that a lot of the opposition to this bill is not educated on what it's actually doing. There is a provision in here for paying a partial payment for people who are coming up in catching up. That amount of money in this bill is $25 or 10% of the total amount due. for that tax year. And the amount of $25 is simply a software issue, because there are so many components to your property tax that if you have the amount too small, you can't distribute it to all of the funds that accept portions of your property tax. So it's a simple bill. Some people are confused. This does not affect the assignment process. It does not. It will not affect tax lien process. It will not affect any other process. If you are familiar with a lot of counties, the day after the tax bill is due, we have some corporations who come in as an investment and pay the unpaid taxes because they know they're going to get an automatic return of the penalty that is due to the person that pays the bill if the person comes current. So that won't change. Counties will continue to get their money. People will continue to go into the lien process if that's appropriate. Simple bill. I urge a due pass. I have a proponent who is very well versed on this with 30 years of doing property tax software in Montana counties, and I would just like to turn it over to him and ask that if you have technical questions, we can skip the re-refer part of the question and go directly to the proponents. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Do we have proponents in the room for House Bill 515?
Chairman Fielder, members of the House Taxation Committee, my name is Don Carlson, C-A-R-L-S-O-N, and I am here in support of House Bill 515. For the record, I am here on my own time and representing myself. I've spent most of the last three decades writing software in direct support of Montana counties and the property taxes that are billed and collected. So as Representative Carlson said, I have a great deal of experience and knowledge in this area, and I am also her spouse. So you should all have a handout that I put together in front of you with a lot more detail regarding my testimony here. I do apologize for the length of it. As the spouse of a legislator, I am keenly aware of how busy you all are, but I wanted to include as much detail as possible. It should answer a lot of questions. I would be more than happy to stand for any other questions that you have about this bill. It really is a very simple bill, and some of the opponents of this bill are making it into something that it just is not. My testimony today is really just going to focus on the highlights of the bill, but as I said before, I'll be happy to stand for any questions that you have. So this bill does three things. One, it changes the payment order, finally, in Montana to require the payment of the oldest year's taxes first. And by doing so, a taxpayer will be paying the taxes that are providing them with the greatest jeopardy of losing their home the oldest year. Currently, for anybody who doesn't know, you cannot pay your oldest year taxes first in Montana until your current year taxes are paid. That defies any sort of logic. In addition, this bill puts Montana on par with all of our surrounding states who already do this, and most of the states in the United States. It's just common sense. They were billed in tax year order. They should be able to be paid in tax year order. The second thing it does is this bill provides our county treasurers with another tool to help them collect property taxes, partial payments. The payment must be a minimum of $25 or 10% of the total tax billed for that year for that parcel, whichever is greater, plus penalty and interest if applicable. And I'm going to keep saying that. The easiest way to think about this bill is going to be this. For current year taxes, instead of making two medium-sized payments, first half, second half, the taxpayer can make up to 10 smaller payments. If those payments occur before the due date, this bill does not change the due dates. If they occur before the due date for that amount of money, they can be made without penalty and interest, exactly as Montana law allows right now. If any amount is paid after the due date, penalty and interest is still assessed. For delinquent year taxes, instead of requiring one very large payment for the entire year, and I'll pause for a moment and say, just so everybody's on the same page, if your taxes go delinquent, you can only pay one amount, the entire year plus penalty and interest. This bill will allow a person to pay 10 smaller payments plus penalty and interest. This bill does not stop penalty and interest in any way. Let me reiterate, it does not change the due dates, nor does it stop any of the current liabilities or jeopardies that a taxpayer may incur due to non-payment of taxes. In addition, this bill does not change any of the current collection tools our county treasurers use. Notice of tax lien, tax liens themselves, taking an assignment, issuing a tax deed, or a writ of execution. It simply adds one more tool that they can use to help collect property taxes. This bill is very similar to current North Dakota law, which has successfully used partial payments for decades. Finally, as was mentioned, this bill removes the 5 p.m. language from MCA, thus allowing payments that are made on the due date to not have penalty and interest assessed. When that bill was written 50, 60 years ago, it made perfect sense. There was no such thing as the internet. There was no such thing as making online payments. In today's world, if a person gets off work on the due date of the taxes and they realize, oh, I got to get my taxes paid, and they pay them online, technically, penalty and interest should be assessed. I am unaware of any county that is currently doing that. So we should just make the law reflect that the 5 p.m. thing goes away. The next day, penalty and interest begins accruing. Thank you again for your time and the opportunity to speak on this bill. I'd be happy to stand for any questions you have. There's a lot of moving parts here, so let me know if you have any, and I urge you to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Do we have other proponents in the room for the bill? Other proponents in the room? Seeing none, do we have proponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have opponents in the room for House Bill 515?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bryson. That's Bryson. And here I'm here on behalf of the Treasurers Association, which, because of a medical issue, I'm told this morning, weren't able to come and provide testimony. I want to start my opposition testimony by thanking the sponsor for bringing this bill forward and her dogged determination to continue having this conversation. As a result of bills that she brought in the past, the Treasurers Association has been working with the Governor's Office and other stakeholders to bring a partial bill payment bill forward for your consideration, and they much prefer the one that they have been working on in the past because it does a couple of things different than this one. It allows partial payments for people that aren't in delinquency. So it's a full partial pill or partial payment bill that addresses both delinquent payments and current payments. So you wouldn't have to pay half of your tax bill in the two times that is currently authorized. You could make payments over the year. I encourage you to consider that additional bill. I am one of those opponents that is confused by this bill because I still don't understand the process that where you can allow for partial payments on delinquencies but still issue tax liens and still go through the process that where you might actually have assignments on the property. If we're going to allow delinquencies to be able to continue to make partial payments, I don't think you can assign tax liens and go to the tax deed process if they're not delinquent. And if they're not delinquent because they're allowed to make partial payments, then you don't have the tax lien and tax deed process. And I agree with both of the proponents that no county treasurer in the state of Montana wants to take somebody's home from them. And the process that you guys define as legislatures in law are the processes that they will follow. I just ask that you consider a broader and different option for delinquencies, partial payments in a bill that's coming forward to you in the future. And I'll try and answer any questions. I am not a treasurer. I wish there were treasurers here that can answer it. But the remaining issue with the bill as it's structured right now is that I still don't understand how you could allow for partial payments and still trigger tax deed and assignment. I don't see how that's possible. Please oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have other opponents in the room? Other opponents in the room? Seeing none. Do we have opponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have informational witnesses in the room for House Bill 515? Informational witnesses? Seeing none. Do we have informational witnesses online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the committee? Representative Fern.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Bryson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fern.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bryson, you referred to the future in another bill. What does the future mean? And what, if it means something like this session, what do you anticipate we will be seeing that will differentiate that bill from what we have before us today?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fern, yes, this session. It's my understanding that Representative Nicola Caucus, the governor's office, the treasurer's office have a draft bill that, and I know time is of the essence, should be hitting the desk sometime in the very near future. And I think the main distinction between that bill, as I understand it, and the draft that I've seen in this bill that's before you today, is that it allows for partial payments in a regimented fashion, I believe 7 over a year, addresses delinquencies, define what a delinquency is, so you can either trigger or not trigger the tax deed process. So it makes two important distinctions. One, it makes it available for anybody that might want to make partial payments, whether they're delinquent or not, and then puts it in a regimented schedule that conforms with the tax deed and notice process, as I understand it.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Us.
Thank you. Other Chair. Questions from the committee? Other questions from the committee? Seeing none. Okay, Representative Carlson, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I would encourage you all to read the handout. This bill allows for partial payments for anyone. In Section 5 on page 3, it says, the county treasurer shall accept a partial payment for the current year taxes or delinquent taxes. It does that. And it makes the amount of money that is due, which obviously this is a committee bill, an amount that the counties can distribute to the accounts. This bill allows for current taxes to be paid with a partial payment. That's in the bill. The other objection is addressed in the handout. If your tax is not paid on time, it will be paid by someone else. That does not change. Nothing in the current process changes. What I can tell you that what the opposition looked like last year was some reluctant opponents who liked the bill. And it seems like we're making progress, because this year they're not even here. But this bill helps treasurers, because I can tell you, from experience, having seen this bill a few times, one of the objections that the treasurers have is not an objection at all. They want to accept partial payments. They want to accept if a person comes in late and makes a payment. And in some counties, what they're doing right now, we could call it a Patellus factor, which is they are doing this. If someone comes into a smaller county and pays a partial payment, the treasurer is going to accept the money. But now the treasurer is potentially could be in trouble, because it's not allowed in the law. This allows counties to collect the money that they need to run the county. If the person doesn't pay the tax, an outside corporation most likely is going to pay that. It's going to be, the county is going to be made whole. The person is going to be in a better position. I don't believe we should be waiting on another bill to make a decision on this bill. This is a good bill, and I urge it to pass. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. This closes the hearing on House Bill 515. House taxation members, will move on to the hearing on Senate Bill 124. Will you please read the short title to the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 124, Revised Corporate Income Tax Apportionment.
Representative Senator Hertz, would you like to open on your bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Greg Hertz, Senate District 6 out of Polson. Mr. Chair, I have some handouts. May I provide those to the
committee? Yes, please. Please send them down each side of the aisle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is a relatively simple bill. Don't be alarmed by the length of it. Just to quickly walk through the bill before I kind of explain what it does. You know, the first couple of pages are just adding some new definitions in regards to what's taxable and what is not. And if you go to page 7 of the bill, that's the meat of the bill on page 21. Basically, it says allocation apportionment of income shall be done by the receipts factor only. And then it goes on and deletes a bunch of other stuff. So I could just sit down and be quiet after that, but I'm sure that a lot of you don't even know what a multi-state corporation apportionment factor is. And just to give a little history over the last many decades, if you think of a corporation that does business in multiple states, and this corporation is a pie, and out of this pie, how do you determine which state gets the tax, the income of that corporation's pie? So decades ago, states got together and formed the multi-state tax compact, and what they came up with rules that said, okay, here's how we're going to cut the pie up so that nobody, no state gets an unfair advantage of taxing a corporation. And so basically what that original multi-state compact said was we're going to use three factors. We're going to look at your factor of your sales. We're going to look at the factor of your employees in the state and your property in the state. And then we're going to take an average of those three factors, and we're going to determine what how much of that taxable income each state gets to tax. And that was working fine for a number of years. And then all of a sudden, some states got outside of that agreement, and they started taxing people either based on the single sales factor, which this bill does, and now we have, I think, up to 30-plus states who do that. The other handful of states are using some form of the multi-arrangement, looking at various factors, and some states, of course, just don't even have state income taxes, so they're not really concerned. So that's why I passed around the handout. So let's just, I think it's easier to kind of walk through the handout and where we are. So should have three pages. On page one, I got company number one, selling into Montana. Under current law that we passed last session, we kind of changed the law a little bit. So we use sales times two, and then you look at payroll and property. So on the left hand, under current law, let's say you got a company in Montana that is selling into Montana. 100,000 of their $1 million sales is in Montana, so that's 10% of their total sales. You use that twice. They have very limited payroll in Montana, 1.79% of their total payroll, and very limited property. So those four factors add up to 22. So you take a quarter of that, that's 5.61. They actually had taxable income of $22.5 million. So $140,000 of that now is taxable in Montana. That same company, if we went to the single sales factor, you can see that we would take 10% of their sales. So now all of a sudden they're going to pay two taxes on $250,000 of income and not the $140,000. So if you go to the next page, you have a company that has employees in Montana but are selling out of state. So this particular company is 10% of their sales are in Montana. The other 90% goes out of state. However, the vast majority of their employees are in Montana, 93%, and 93% of their property is in Montana. So 51% of their taxable income can be allocated to Montana at $1.2 million. However, here's the problem that's going to end up happening. If they're doing business in another state that has using a single sales factor, now this particular company could get double tax on their income because that other state says, oh, no, Montana, we're using a single sales factor, so we're going to tax 90% of your income in our state, $2.2 million. Plus, you know, Montana's going to do 1.2, so now all of a sudden you're paying taxes on more than the $2.5 million. of income. With a single sales factor, that particular company in Montana would only be paying 10% taxes on their entire taxable income. And then on the last example, you go to employees in Montana and selling in Montana. So, I mean, 90% of your sales are in Montana, 90% of your payroll's here, 90% of your business is here. So about 91%, you're going to pay taxes on more or less 91.5% of your income. And if you're using a single sales factor, you're going to pay about 90% of your income related to Montana taxable income. So what are we trying to do on this bill? And on company two, those are the type of companies that we want to come to Montana. And if they're in Montana, we want to make sure they're not getting overtaxed, not only by the state of Montana, but by other states too. We want to make sure the pie is getting cut up fairly amongst everybody. So why do we want these companies in Montana like company number two? Number one, they're providing some very good jobs to the state of Montana. All of those employees, in this particular example, 93% of their employees are living in Montana. They're paying taxes in Montana. That includes income taxes. That includes property taxes. The same with the company. They are living here, and they are providing excellent jobs, and they are providing property taxes and paying, you know, helping their communities. They're the ones that are donating to their schools and all the causes in their communities. They're not like these online companies that are bombarding our state with goods and products who aren't paying their fair share of taxes. And they are truly hurting our brick and mortar, mom and pop, Main Street business owners, even though these are multi-state companies, but we still want these companies to continue and expand in Montana. I mean, if you could just imagine, how do we attract something like a meat processing facility to Montana? Well, under our current taxation of multi-state corporations, which a meat processor would be, because you're not going to sell all the meat you process in Montana, just in Montana, you're going to sell it outside the state. So this would really help attract a company like that. It might help attract a company that's manufacturing firearms, ammunitions also, a company that basically is involved in computer software, computer equipment. These are all very good jobs that we want to come to Montana, and that's why this bill is so important to help incentivize these companies to come here. We have companies here right now that are doing that, that are selling most of their products out of state. We want them to expand in Montana. Without this bill, they can get penalized for expanding to Montana. If all of a sudden they increase the amount of their property in Montana, they could end up paying more income taxes on income in Montana, and then also get double taxed in other states. So there's going to be some companies that are going to save money on this, and those are those businesses that I talked about that are primarily located here in Montana. But we want them to stay here because they are paying other forms of taxes, and they're doing such a huge benefit to our state. There's going to be companies that are going to be paying more taxes now into Montana, and those are the companies that I talked about that are selling into Montana with very little infrastructure here and very little employees, and they need to start paying their fair share to the state. And that's why we have a positive fiscal note on this. Some of those companies, out-of-state companies, are going to be paying more taxes. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll sit down. We listen to proponents and opponents. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have a point of order.
You may sit down, Representative Hertz. Point of order.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we do not, or I do not, have a copy of the fiscal note for this bill. I'd like that so that I could ask questions about the fiscal note of the...
Representative Konauer, that just came to our attention up here on the front desk. Do you have...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think we can get that up here for you.
We have it. It's online. We're going to bring it up.
Mr. Chair, we're going to get copies for the committee.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, fiscal note number two, And it's been posted for a while, so it should be up online because it's there was an amendment in the Senate.
Thank you. So we'll get copies of that. In the meantime, while we're waiting for the fiscal note, and we can address that, do we have other questions from the committee regarding? I'm sorry. Let's back up a little bit. Do we have any proponents in the room for Senate Bill 124?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Derek Bell, B-E-L-L. I'm the Department of Revenue's Division Administrator of its Business and Income Tax Division. Here on behalf of the agency and the Governor's Office in support of Senate Bill 124, with your permission, I have a couple handouts for you.
Thank you. Would you please hand those out?
All right, Mr. Chair, realize you've been here, had a long morning so far, and I will not repeat the sponsor's testimony. I think sponsor did a great job of articulating what this bill does and why it's important. I just wanted to make a couple key points about why the department and the administration supports it. First off, I want to focus the committee's attention on the fact that this bill only affects corporations that have multi-state business activity. Senate Bill 124 does not have an effect on purely Montana C corporations. This is a multi-state or multinational corporate effect. Why is it important? As sponsor indicated, this is the administration's effort to modernize how multi-state businesses apportion its business income to Montana. The single sales factor is a better reflection of how multi-state businesses generate income today versus 50 or 60 years ago when the three-factor formula was first adopted by the Multi-State Tax Commission and UDIPPA. It promotes uniformity among the states. The most common apportionment formula in existence right now is a single sales formula. Uniformity is a pretty important benchmark for my division when we're working on audits for multi-state corporations. And lastly, Senate Bill 124 incentivizes these businesses, multi-state corporations, to invest in property and people in the state of Montana. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, Mr. Chair, and encourage your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have other proponents in the room for Senate Bill 124?
Mr. Chairman, Bob Story, STORY, Montana Taxpayers Association. The sponsor did an excellent job of explaining how this bill creates fairness for multi-state corporations and how the pie is divided up. One of the main reasons that states have gone to a single sales factor apportionment method has to do with moving away from a goods industry to a service, a goods economy to a service economy. You know, you have so many things now that are sold across state lines, in states, everywhere, that are mainly just services. And so you don't have the infrastructure of buildings and payroll that you have in a manufacturing society. But Montana still has a lot of potential in the manufacturing area because we have a lot of natural resources. We have those types of things. We also have a growing service economy. Probably the largest sector of the economy now is services and those types of things that people live here and sell their services out of state. And so we still get, as the sponsor said, we still get individual income tax from those people. We still get property taxes from them. What we don't want to happen is them get double taxed on their corporate income when they're working across state lines. You don't have the fiscal note yet, but it actually generates about, this bill got delayed. It has delayed, doesn't go into effect till 2025. Because there are still some Montana businesses that are concerned about the issue of how it affects them. If you recall last session, the sponsor brought that bill that started down the road towards single sales factor and it became a double-weighted sales because there were some significant impacts on industry in Montana. And so the department and those industries worked through that issue. There's still a few industries that have some concerns and they want some time to work with the department. So the bill does not go into effect for an additional year. But when it goes into full effect, it's expected to generate a positive income of around $15-16 million a year. And as the sponsor said, a lot of that revenue is coming from companies that are selling into Montana and don't have the payroll and the property here to the three-factor formula doesn't work well with. So we support the bill. We think it will help improve job opportunities in Montana and the ability to add value to both goods and services that, again, will be sold out of state.
Thank you. Do we have other proponents for the bill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Eric Burke on behalf of the Montana Federation of Public Employees. It's not always that Mr. Story and I are together on a bill, and I think I've shocked the sponsor a few times standing up for this one. We've looked at it. We have a resolution for tax legislation. It basically states that MFPE supports legislation that creates and maintains a tax system that is adequate, equitable, simple, balanced, progressive, and universal. And I'd say those first three, adequate, equitable, and simple, this bill actually gets there. And it actually raises money for the state, but it does it in a way that conforms with what many other states have done. And that gets into the equity question as well. And so we're here today to support and would urge your passage.
Thank you. Other proponents for the bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Wade, WADE, here today on behalf of BNSF Railway Company. We're one of the industries that Mr. Story spoke about that had concerns last session as we began the process to move to the single sales factor. We appreciated working in the interim with the department to address our concerns, and as a result, we're here as a proponent for Senate Bill 124. In addition, the Montana Chamber of Commerce also wanted to convey their support for Senate Bill 124, and we'd urge you to support it as well.
Thank you. Other proponents in the room for Senate Bill 124? Seeing none, do we have proponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have opponents in the room for Senate Bill 124? Opponents? Seeing none. Do we have opponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have informational witnesses in the room for Senate Bill 124?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Finn McMichael, MCM, ICH, AEL, an economist with the Department of Revenue, available for any questions on the fiscal note, if you've gotten it.
Thank you. Other informational witnesses in the room? Do we have... Seeing no more informational witnesses in the room, do we have informational witnesses online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the committee? Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we don't have the fiscal note, so I hope we'll keep questions open until we get the fiscal note and have a moment to look at it. But I do have a question. I don't know who it's best to go to, but let's start with Mr. Bell, if I might.
Mr. Chair, Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bell. Can you explain to the committee, I know that the sponsor actually put out some information, but he did talk about double taxation. So if you can actually talk about the double taxation portion and how that actually happens, that would be great.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Konauer. The best way I can describe it is, unlike the federal government, the states that a corporation does business in are attempting their best to divide the pie. He describes it as a pie. I do a pizza, whatever one is your preference.
There is pizza pie.
That's true. In any case, there is no requirement that states have to be uniform. And so in the 50s and 60s and into the early parts of the 2000s, most states had an equally weighted three-factor formula to mitigate the possibility that, say, Idaho would tax the same income that Montana would. If you had an equally weighted formula, the thought is, based on the same worldwide income, that the state share of that would be equally divided between the states in which the company did business. The issue that we've run into, the states have run into since the early 2000s, has been, as a sponsor indicated, most states have moved away from a three-weighted formula to a single sales factor. So now we have situations where, let's say, California or Idaho or pick a state may just look at a receipts factor. Montana will be looking at other factors. So the risk, I guess, is that the pie is being divided a little less equally than it was under a more uniform approach. And what we've seen since the early 2000s is, again, most states have realized that the economy has changed and have moved towards a single sales factor, which is, again, designed, you know, uniformity isn't the only thing, but it's an important thing to mitigate the double tax effects. So really, it's what it's trying to do is keep the pie or the pizza or the pizza pie as one size and provide a uniform formula by which the states would all divvy up those slices. Did I answer your question in any meaningful way?
Mr. Chair, a follow-up question.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bell, so if there are still states that aren't doing it differently, have we solved the problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kohenauer, there is still the potential that a corporation, if they're subjected to multiple apportionment formulas, could be subjected to double tax. Now, what the Supreme Court has said is that double taxation is not inherently illegal or unconstitutional. And I think to the extent that the Montana legislature can only control what it can control, which is Montana-specific issues. So there is the issue of, is possible if you have divergent approaches, which is why I think moving towards a single is important, because you have less risk of that. The other risk is nowhere income, where income is just vanishing off into the breeze and it's not getting picked up anywhere. So I think it kind of works in both ways. But you're right, there is still a potential risk, but that's really dependent on what other states are doing, the minority of states, rather.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have other questions from the committee? Other questions from the committee now that we all have a fiscal note in front of us? Seeing no further questions from the committee at this time, Senator Hertz, would you like to? Oh, do we have somebody?
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. And it's for the sponsor, if I might. In.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kohenauer.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and Senator Hertz, I just wanted to follow up on what changes you made to the bill that then generated the secondary fiscal note, just so that we can understand what changes were made from then to now, because we just got this.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Kohenauer, the only change we made was the effective date. Originally, the bill was effective January 1 of 24, now it's January 1 of 25.
And just the follow-up on that, what does that do for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a matter of fairness to me. When I'm up here cutting taxes for people, I like to get them done as fast as possible. But if I'm potentially raising taxes on some companies, which this bill does, I think we owe it to those particular companies who are going to be paying us more taxes to give them the opportunity to either adjust their operations in order to make sure that they can manage these new taxes that they have to pay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Other questions? Seeing none, Senator Hertz, would you like to close on your bill?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. This is a great bill for the state of Montana, as I had said, and to attract more businesses, entities into Montana, and encourage those that are here who are doing multi-state activities to expand where they're at. I know up in the Flathead, we've got a multi-state company up there that employs hundreds, if not thousands of people, and they would continue to like to expand, as in all across the state. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would hope you do a due pass on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hertz. This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 124. I'd like to take a short recess here before we return for executive action. And I'd like to do executive action on three bills at this time. We'll do executive action on House Bill 416, which has been in your folder. We heard that, I believe, yesterday. And we'll do executive action on Senate Bill 121 and 124, which we heard today. So let's take a recess and come back here at 11 o'clock to do executive action. Till that time, we'll take a recess. House Taxation will come back to order, and we'll be doing executive action on three bills: House Bill 416, Senate Bill 121, and Senate Bill 124. We'll open executive action on House Bill 416. Is there a motion? Vice Chair Thame, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move do pass on House Bill 416.
Okay, House Bill 416 has been moved. Is there discussion on Representative Thame?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also like to move Amendment HB 416.1.1.
Okay, you explain the amendment.
Sure. I don't know. Okay, I'll let me.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee,
I got him.
This amendment revises the threshold for the renting the dwelling to from 130% of fair market rent to 125% of fair market rent. It also extends the termination date 2 years and provides that the credit would be 55% of foregone rent in the fifth and sixth consecutive year. And then because the termination date is pushed out, it also pushes out the review of the credit by one biennium to give more chance for there to be data on the credit. Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that explanation. Discussion on the amendment. Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a substitute motion to table House Bill 416.
We're talking on the amendment right now, so we're not on the bill at this time. So we have discussion on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment 416.1.1. Question's been called. All in favor? We'll do a roll call vote on the amendment, please. We can do a voice vote? Okay, we'll do a voice vote on the amendment. All in favor of the amendment to House Bill 416.1.1, say aye.
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 All opposed? Nay. Okay, the amendment has passed. Proxies.
Representative Knudsen votes aye by proxy.
Representative Nikolakis votes aye by proxy. As close as I can get.
Representative Abbott votes aye by proxy. Representative Buckley votes aye by proxy.
Okay, the amendment has passed for House Bill 416.1.1. So now we're back to the motion on House Bill 416.1.1. Is there discussion? Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think part of what we've talked about in this committee is the housing issue within our state. How do we make it more conducive to try to get something done quicker? And I think, you know, there's not going to be one bill that's one panacea to solve the problem in all of our communities. But I do think that this is a bill that will actually contribute a small portion to what we're trying to do to make more housing available at a faster rate. And you do have people that are concerned about trying to make housing affordable in some of these areas. And if they can get a little bit of money, don't forget they're not offsetting the total of the lower rent that they provide. It's just a portion of it. And if that incentivizes them to try to take something from a short-term rental to a long-term rental, I think it is something that would be helpful to our housing issues here in the state of Montana. So I'm in support of this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Just want to clarify that we're dealing with a motion for due pass to House Bill 416, once amended. Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, I make a substitute motion to table House Bill 416.
Okay, that's a non-debatable motion. We'll do a roll call vote for table House Bill 416.1.1, once amended. Roll call vote, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Welch.
Yes.
Vice Chair Thane.
No.
Representative Abbott.
No, by proxy.
Representative Barker.
Yes.
Representative Brewster.
Yes.
Representative Buckley.
No, by proxy.
Representative Butcher?
Yes.
Representative Konauer?
No.
Representative Essman?
Yes.
Representative Fern?
No.
Representative Kazmaier?
Yes.
Representative Kearns?
Yes.
Representative R. Knudsen?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Malone?
Yes.
Representative Marler?
No.
Representative Miner?
Yes.
Representative Nikolakakos?
Yes. By proxy.
By proxy, I'm sorry.
Representative Romano?
No.
Representative T. Smith?
Yes.
Representative Vinton?
Yes.
Chair Fielder?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, there are 14 ayes and 7 nays.
Okay, House Bill 416, once amended, has been tabled. We will now move on to Senate Bill 121. Do we have a motion on Senate Bill 121?
Mr. Chair, I move do concur on Senate Bill 121.
Okay. This is a motion we just, this is a bill we just heard this morning. Is there discussion on Senate Bill 121? Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wish that this bill provided equal benefit between the two parts of this bill, because I do think that that would be helpful to the situation that we have with our folks trying to afford their rents at that lower income level, trying to keep their kids in child care and paying for child care at that level. I just don't think that when you're talking about a bill of this magnitude, over $300 million in a biennium, that we can afford this ongoing if you're not getting money in the pockets of the people who are actually going to put it in our local economies and drive some economic benefit as well. When you look at the that handout that we got, where from the bill itself, you know, $38 is going to our lowest income people for less than $23,000, and people that are $572,000 and greater get almost $6,000 worth of benefit. I think we can do better by Montanans and really actually drive a portion of our economy that could help us with that ongoing services that we need in every, to make people successful in all of our local communities. And so I will have to be a no on this bill unless there's some kind of changes that increase and help us with that, the ability for our folks to be successful throughout Montana, Mr. Chair.
Okay, further, Vice Chair Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two quick points. First of all, I think if we look at overall tax structure to include property tax, income tax, and the fact that we don't have a sales tax, I do think that we find ourselves regionally competitive. Like many of you, knocked hundreds of doors during the campaign season, and nobody broached the subject of income tax. Everybody talked about property tax. I recognize that we as a body need some tax relief. However, I would much prefer to see that relief applied to property tax as opposed to income tax. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fern.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and committee members. I would echo the Vice Chair's sentiments. You know, in my little ideal world, in my bubble, I would like to see a good portion of the 95 mills that we pay that go to property taxes, about 72% residential, be paid for with income taxes rather than property taxes. I'm afraid I haven't got the courage to put that one forward, but that would be echo the sentiments probably of many of my constituents to have overall universal property tax reductions and use the income tax without raising the income tax to help lower that. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you. Other discussion on Senate Bill 121? Question. The question's been called. We'll do a roll call vote on Senate Bill 121.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Welch.
Yes.
Vice Chair Thain.
No.
Representative Abbott.
No, by proxy.
Representative Barker.
Yes.
Representative Brewster.
Yes.
Representative Buckley.
No, by proxy.
Representative Butcher.
Yes.
Representative Konauer.
No.
Representative Essman.
Yes.
Representative Fern.
No.
Representative Kazmaier.
Yes.
Representative Kearns.
Yes.
Representative R. Knudsen.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Malone.
Yes.
Representative Marler.
No.
Representative Miner.
Yes.
Representative Nikolakakos.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Romano.
No.
Representative T. Smith.
Yes.
Representative Vinton.
Yes.
Chair Fielder.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we have 14 ayes and 7 nays.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Representative Kazmaier, will you be would you carry this bill 121 on the floor?
I would love to, Mr. Chair, but Representative Brewster wants to carry it, so I will let him have that, carry the bill.
So be it. Okay, we'll open an executive action on Senate Bill 124.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 124, I move do concur.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Is there discussion on Senate Bill 124? Representative Fern.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is a continuation from last session to look at multi-state corporations that operate in the state. I think it's a great bill. It moves us forward in a modern economy and gets some of those bigger industries or providers where we get lots of packages to pay their fair share where they don't have much property presence or labor presence. So I'm going to support it.
Thank you. Do we have other discussion on Senate Bill 124?
Question.
Question's been called. Can we do a voice vote on Senate Bill 124? All in favor of Senate Bill 124, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Proxies?
Representative Knudsen votes aye by proxy.
Representative Nico votes aye by proxy.
Representative Abbott votes aye by proxy. Representative Buckley votes aye by proxy.
Very good. I've been told that Representative Rhonda Knudsen will carry this bill on the House floor. That closes our business for executive action today. We will meet tomorrow again at 8 o'clock in the morning. I thank you for a good meeting today. We were very efficient, and we're out of here before lunch. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.